From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. Thank you for tuning in. Hundreds of thousands of people attended the Seahawks Super Bowl 2026 parade in Seattle on Wednesday. Juneau resident and Seahawks superfan Donna James was one of them. Here's a snippet of what the parade sounded like from a video James recorded. James decided to make the trip to Seattle with her partner, Ken Willard, after the Seahawks defeated the New England Patriots 29-13 in Sunday's game.
Well, we watched the Super Bowl, and they announced that the parade was going to be on Wednesday. And so right after the Super Bowl, we said, well, are we going to go? Are we going to go? And he said, let's get our tickets now. So we got our tickets that night, and we flew out on Tuesday.
On the day of the parade, James and Willard woke up at 3 in the morning and got to the parade grounds in downtown Seattle at 5 a.m. They watched the parade, which started at 11, from a bridge on 4th Avenue. She said being at the parade and cheering for her favorite team with other 12s, as Seahawks fans are known, was a dream come true.
When I'm around Seattle Seahawks fans, I get this cold chill, a happy feeling, just so happy. It's hard to explain. Halfway through, I kind of cried. Just to be at a Super Bowl parade with the favorite team, you know, with all the fans.
James has been a Seahawks fan since 2010. She's been known to drive around Juneau in a big truck with Seahawks decals. Her license plate says Go HWKS for Go Hawks. And she has countless memorabilia, including Seahawks-themed Klingit regalia, jewelry, and a paddle. James says she never misses watching a Seahawks game and has attended 18 of them in person. And Juneau residents will have a chance to weigh in on what they'd like the city to prioritize during its upcoming budget process as it faces a multi-million dollar budget hole. The city will host the first of three public workshops on the topic on Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. at the Filipino Community Hall downtown. The workshop is filled up, but people can join a wait list. During last fall's municipal election, Juneau voters approved municipal tax cuts that will lower the city's revenue by an estimated $10 to $12 million. At the upcoming workshops, city officials will break down what services are at stake. Residents will have the chance to share their thoughts and work through different scenarios to balance the budget. Those could include cuts to city services or increases in local sales taxes. The upcoming workshop follows a city survey that asked residents to pick what programs and services are most important to fund and to pick what services to reduce funding for. The list includes programs like libraries and museums, trails and parks, and homelessness services. The survey also asked what residents want the assembly to prioritize, like whether to keep taxes low, continue to support local businesses year-round, or fund affordable housing projects. The survey closed earlier this week, and the results have yet to be shared with the public. City officials say the survey and the public workshops will help inform the assembly in the coming months as it decides how to move forward with the budget. Two other workshops are slated in the coming weeks at the Mendenhall Valley Library and Douglas Library. Both are also full, but people can join a waitlist for potential future workshops. The Assembly will also host a listening session for the public to weigh in on the process on April 15th. The Juneau School District released a budget simulation tool on Wednesday that allows people to build and submit what they think the district's budget should look like. Balancing Act focuses on building the district's operating budget. That includes funding for student instruction, including teachers, administrators, and school supplies. The district originally planned to also send a budget survey to families earlier this month, but Juneau School Board Vice President Elizabeth Sidden said during a budget work session she was concerned the community might not see its responses reflected in the budget.
I don't want to put a survey out that is not real clear to the public how we used it later, especially in our budget. This all needs to have clear line of sight what we're going to do with it, with the feedback we get in the budgeting process.
The board unanimously decided to set the survey aside this year. The budget tool starts off with a preliminary budget that maintains all of the district's current services going into the next school year. It gives the public options on where they can add or cut teachers and funding. But there are some limits. Some funding is required by law and can't be changed. Other services can't be cut by more than 10%. Information in the tool says larger cuts would, quote, likely result in the inability to maintain compliance, end quote. The initial budget begins with a $5.3 million deficit and assumes the city will contribute the maximum it's legally allowed to. Even when making all the cuts possible within the tool, the district is still left with a $1.1 million deficit. That could be covered with the district savings. There's an opportunity within the Balancing Act to write comments on every source of revenue and expenditures. The next budget-related meeting is tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. at Juneau Douglas High School, Yira'a Kahle. Community members can also submit written feedback by emailing budgetinput@junoschools.org. the board is expected to approve a budget by March 12th. And a Juneau representative's proposal to ban law enforcement officers from wearing face masks on duty got a chilly reception from some lawmakers during its first hearing earlier this week. KTOO's Clarice Larson tells us more.
On Tuesday, lawmakers heard Juneau House Representative Sarah Hannon's bill for the first time during a House State Affairs Committee meeting. Hannon, a Juneau Democrat, pre-filed House Bill 250 in early January, ahead of the legislative session. In a presentation to the committee, Hannon called her bill pro-law enforcement. She says it's aimed at increasing police transparency and communication in Alaska.
Masked law enforcement is wrong on many levels. When officers conceal their faces, they compromise transparency, communication, and the public's perception of accountability.
Hannon's bill comes in the wake of public outrage across the nation after a masked immigration and customs enforcement officer shot and killed a Minnesota woman on camera. Another man was killed by a U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officer in Minneapolis just weeks later. The deaths drew heavy criticism. Minnesota and congressional leaders pressed the Trump administration over the facts and legality of actions by federal officers. That's as protests over immigration enforcement have ramped up across the country. Representative Andy Story, also a Democrat from Juneau, spoke about the unrest in Minnesota, which is her home state.
I think about the harm that's happening, what we're hearing about on the federal level now when people are coming into communities, and it's significant psychological harm that I have been hearing and reading about, and I think that's what you're trying to prevent in this bill for that happening here.
Other states across the U.S. have sought to impose similar bans. On Monday, a federal court blocked enforcement of a law in California that sought to bar federal and local officers from wearing masks. The judge ruled it violated a federal doctrine that prohibits state laws from discriminating against the federal government, in this case, specifically federal agents. However, Hannon's bill, as drafted, would ban anyone acting as a law enforcement officer in Alaska from wearing a mask while on duty, including federal, state, and local agents. The ban does exempt medical masks, transparent safety shields, cold weather masks, or masks worn by undercover officers. An officer who violates the ban would be charged with a Class B misdemeanor per violation, which is punishable by up to 90 days in jail and a $2,000 fine. At Tuesday's hearing, some lawmakers were skeptical.
I'm seriously concerned about this bill, actually.
That's House Representative Kevin McCabe, a Big Lake Republican. He argued that masks are a tool that can prevent attacks and doxing of officers. He questioned whether the bill was necessary in Alaska.
I have never seen a masked officer that wasn't on a snowmobile, actually, in Alaska. I'm not sure that this is actually a problem, but I do think it is a tool.
Hannon said ahead of this year's legislative session that she saw the bill as a way to start a conversation about the issue. It's unclear if it will have enough support to advance in the legislature. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And Monday is Elizabeth Peratrovich Day, an Alaska state holiday honoring a Tlingit activist who testified before Alaska's territorial legislature in Juneau to demand civil rights for Alaska Native people. KTOO spoke with Juneau author Ernestine Hayes about Peratrovich's influence and what she thinks the activist would do if she were alive today. Tlingit author Sean Kahlat Ernestine Hayes says Elizabeth Peratrovich and her legacy inspire her, especially as she reads the news today.
Not only are we facing the same challenges as she faced, but we have her as a model. And if we stop and consider what would she be doing right now, today, then we can use her example as the choices we should make.
Hayes has written two memoirs chronicling her life in and out of Southeast Alaska in the wake of Peratrovich's legacy. She was selected as the Alaska State Writer Laureate in 2016. In 2021, she was named the Rasmussen Foundation's Distinguished Artist, and 2 years later, she was awarded a United States Artist Fellowship. One way Hayes thinks we can embody Peratrovich's mission today, making sure that Alaska Native people continue to have a seat at decision-making tables.
We need to ask, has that discrimination that Elizabeth Peratrovich fought, has it just moved out of the restaurants and into the boardroom and into the organizing committees?
And Hayes says Peratrovich's fight against discrimination isn't over, especially when it comes to pointing the mirror at ourselves.
If we speak out, demonstrate against, or protest against an administration that, as policy, is trying to destroy diversity and inclusion, then we really should be modeling that ourselves.
Hay says having a state holiday to celebrate Paratrovich's legacy is a step towards deeper and more meaningful acknowledgement of the role Alaska Native people have had and continue to have in shaping our community.
It's certainly not our ultimate goal, which is inclusion. But I think it's a good step, as long as we always remember there's no real final step in nurturing our values. There's always more to do.
In the 1940s, the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood began petitioning Alaska's territorial governor for civil rights protection. That included equal access to public facilities and services, banning racial discrimination in businesses open to the public, and no more signs that said things like, quote, no dogs, no natives. Paratrovich's testimony is often credited with swaying the territorial legislature. Although no audio recording of her actual testimony exists, a version of it for kids has been memorialized in an episode of the PBS kids show Molly of Denali.
I must remind you, senators, that Native people are treated unfairly in this state. How do you think Native children feel when they see signs that read, no Natives allowed, and aren't allowed in the same school as white children? Today, you can tell the world how we are treated is wrong and pass this law to make discrimination in Alaska illegal.
Elizabeth Paratrovich Day, every year on February 16th, marks the anniversary of the Alaska Anti-Discrimination Act, passed in 1945. It was the first anti-discrimination act to become law in any state or territory in the United States. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
This is KTOO.